Welcome everyone again to Maximus Call-In Radio Show, episode 46. This show is sponsored by MaximusTribe.com, my company. And for a little bit of background on Maximus, I really became interested in the topic of testosterone after watching a BBC special on hormones. And they were actually talking to a professor that was looking at testosterone levels in utero, and you could basically tell how much testosterone you were exposed to when you were an infant by looking at something called the 2D-4D digit ratio. So the 2D is your ring finger, and your 4D is your index finger. And so if you look at the ratio between the two, if you, as a guy, have a longer ring finger than index finger, it's a sign of high testosterone exposure in utero. And he basically looked at the ratio between these two fingers amongst a track team and basically ranked the athletes in terms of their 2D, 4D digit ratio, and then used that to predict how well they would do in a race. And I think he got like 4 out of 5 athletes correct in terms of what order they would place. And that kind of blew my mind, because I was thinking, wow, the amount of hormones that you're exposed to when you're in your mother's womb, basically like 20 years later, predicted how good you are at sports. So in a lot of ways, like I always say, testosterone is destiny. It kind of predicts like your life success to some degree, certainly when it comes to athletic endeavors. And so it became really interested in the topic of, well, if that's the case, obviously you can't control how much you're exposed to in utero, but in terms of your adult life, how do you optimize your testosterone? Because it is associated with performance. Unfortunately, I kind of looked into like, is there any over-the-counter supplements that increase testosterone? And unfortunately, as a scientist, the answer is no. There's very little evidence that anything over-the-counter increases testosterone. And if it does, it doesn't make very much of a difference. It'll increase something like 10%, which is meaningless, and you won't really feel a difference. On the other hand, there is prescription, what's called testosterone replacement therapy, or TRT, and that usually involves an injection at least a weekly basis, which is literally a pain in the ass and not really indicated unless you're an older gentleman and your testicles don't work anymore. It's not really something that's recommended by doctors for healthy young men, because it causes, when you take testosterone from outside of the body, it causes your body to shut down its own production. You get testicular shrinkage, infertility, and you become dependent on it for the rest of your life. And so, unfortunately, I was like, that's not a great solution either. But I ran across essentially an alternative approach that uses oral prescription medications that are actually estrogen receptor blockers, and it stimulates your body's own natural production of testosterone. I thought the research behind this was very compelling. Tried it myself and now started a whole company around it. And so basically we use a doctor prescribed medication, and we put people on a protocol, and then within 30 days we test them before and after using at-home lab tests, which shows that on average we can get people to increase their testosterone by between 1.5 to 2.5x. So most people on average double their testosterone levels, which will improve your energy, improve libido and erection quality, improves lean mass in building muscle, and improves memory and focus. Which are four qualities that are associated with higher testosterone levels. So if you're interested in exploring this, you can check us out if you're located in California or Florida at MaximusTribe.com, which is sponsoring this show. But for the rest of the show, I will invite people up to join us and ask questions. We did have a couple people submit questions from last week. So I'll answer those first, and if anyone wants to chime in, just raise your hand over on Clubhouse, or if you're on Discord or Instagram Live, feel free to chime in. But I'll start out with user-submitted questions. So the first question that came in from Discord last week is it a good idea to take creatine if you're looking for maximum gains? So it's a great question. For those who are not familiar, creatine or creatine monohydrate is a common over-the-counter supplement that is ergogenic, meaning it enhances athletic performance. And a lot of people have very common questions. So I looked actually at the scientific literature so I can give you the latest. And this was actually from a paper that was published as of February 2021. And it answers a lot of great questions about creatine supplementation. So in my opinion, creatine is one of the only supplements that is helpful in terms of enhancing athletic performance. Now, it does not increase testosterone, so it won't do anything for you on the testosterone front, but it's helpful for other things. So what is creatine? Creatine is basically a naturally occurring chemical or compound. It's found in red meat. So if you consume lots of red meat, you'll get lots of creatine, but you need to consume massive quantities to get as much as you would in the supplement. So you'd probably have to consume a couple pounds of meat per day to get about 5 grams of creatine, which is the amount that you are generally recommended in a supplement. Creatine enhances the production of what's called ATP, which is essentially an energy molecule, and it gives you more energy in order to lift weights. And so if you take creatine and you go to the gym, you'll typically be able to do, I would say on average, like 1 to 2 extra reps on every set. And that allows you to obviously get stronger and build more muscle mass. So it's not going to do anything if you sit on your butt all day and don't work out. But if you do work out, it enhances the quality of your workouts and allows you to put on more lean muscle mass. So that's what creatine is. It's been very well studied. There are over 500 peer-reviewed publications on creatine, and it works very well. And so there's a lot of common questions, though, that people have about creatine. And that one, does it lead to water retention? Is that why people gain weight? And the answer is, if you're taking a lot at the beginning, so there's this myth that you need to do what's called a loading phase, meaning take huge amounts, 25 grams for the first 5 days in order for it to saturate in your system. The literature shows that you actually don't need to do that, and that's what's causing the water weight. But if you take it for a longer period of time, you don't necessarily get the bloating or the water retention issues because your body kind of adapts to it. Second, it's not an anabolic steroid. It's not like testosterone replacement therapy that I talked about. So it's not going to cause any shutdown or down regulation of your system. Studies show that it doesn't increase free testosterone, doesn't increase total testosterone, doesn't increase DHT. Now, there is a common question that people ask is, does it create hair loss or baldness? There was one study that was published in 2009 that showed an increase in DHT. DHT is the derivative molecule of testosterone, which has sometimes been associated with hair loss, but though that's controversial, that study's actually never been replicated. So no one's ever found those results again. And the results of that study were a little bit wonky methodologically. And so it's unclear whether it's believable. Now, I have heard anecdotal reports from people, especially like users on Reddit or on the online communities, that say they experience more hair shedding on creatine. But there's lots more people who take it and don't have any hair problems. So I don't think there's any strong evidence to suggest that creatine exacerbates or accelerates hair loss. The thing I would just say is just try it out and see for yourself. If you notice like your hair falling out, obviously just stop taking it. But I don't think that happens, honestly, to most people. Second, it doesn't result in any kidney damage if you have normal, healthy kidneys or renal dysfunction. So I don't think there's any concern there. It doesn't cause dehydration or muscle cramping. It's safe actually to take and generally safe, potentially beneficial for even children, adolescents, and women. So women can take it as well. It's not a male-only supplement. It doesn't increase fat mass. And in fact, it tends to support dropping body fat and increase muscle mass. And like I said, you don't need to take a loading dose. The recommended dosage from the research literature is about 3 to 5 grams of creatine or 0.1 gram of creatine per kilogram of body mass that you have. And that's effective. You don't need to do the loading phase. Just take 3 to 5 grams a day, or like I said, 0.1 gram per kilogram of body mass if your body mass is pretty different. I would say if you're a smaller person, 3 grams is fine. If you're a bigger guy, 5 grams is good to go. It also seems to work in older adults, which is really important because you want to maintain, you know, muscle mass into your older age. And it's not just for weightlifting. It actually seems to be beneficial for a variety of athletic and sporting activities. So if you're just like an athlete, you're competing, or you're participating in any sort of competitive sports, does seem to be helpful. And the recommended form that I recommend is just plain creatine monohydrate. There are these new fancy forms. There's no evidence that they're actually any better. The main thing I recommend is you just get a high quality form. Unfortunately, supplements are not very standardized. So the brand name version of it is called CreaPure. And that's produced in Germany, and it has very high quality standards versus some of the stuff that you get in China. So if you do a Google search or Amazon search for CreaPure, You'll find the different brands use CreaPure manufactured creatine, and that's how you know it's high quality. Optimum Nutrition is an example of a brand that uses CreaPure creatine, and that's super common. You can find that basically any vitamin shop or GNC or any online retailer will carry Optimum Nutrition, or basically any other brand that uses CreaPure. So highly recommended supplement. Like I said, it's not going to increase your testosterone, but it'll improve your athletic performance. And so for something that's like relatively cheap and over the counter, it is highly recommended. So great question there.
I have a question. Since this protocol for the Maximus King protocol is designed to raise testosterone, will we see added benefits such as a slimmer face? I'm an older man now, so I don't think I can get the bone structure changes, but I would love to lose some face fat. To add to my question, it's not about making healthier changes and expecting added benefits, but more or so the overall effect of the protocol. When I see other results with traditional TRT, they get slimmer, more well-defined jaw, as if their body naturally slims down, including the face, over time. Oh boy. Of course, with exercise and all, we will see is weight loss. I'm just wondering if this protocol can have similar results with the face changes that naturally happen with pinning testosterone, TRT.
Yeah, so this is like a longer question, but the person was basically asking, if I increase my testosterone using the Maximus King protocol, will it result in decreased body fat and a slimmer face? So it's a great question. So I'll tell you what the research literature basically shows with the type of pharmaceuticals that we use. There is an effect on body composition, meaning that when you look at lean body mass, so lean body mass is basically all of your body weight except for body fat, right? So it includes your muscles, organs, bones, tissues, everything. So that's how you know if you're increasing lean body mass, you're not just gaining fat. So it does result in a increase in lean body mass of about 5 pounds over 12 weeks. So it's a nice way of kind of bulking up lean mass, which is what you want, obviously. You want that kind of lean muscle, as they say, or lean tone. And so it does help people bulk up, not obviously to a degree that you would see on like an anabolic steroid, but what we're doing is obviously sort of safe and effective. Now, in terms of body fat, it's not a body fat drug, so to speak, but the testosterone boost that you get does increase energy. And one of the things that, of course, when people do when they have higher energy is they're more willing and more motivated to go to the gym, to eat right, and just make changes in their life. And so one of the things that we do as part of our protocol is we help people with that behavior change. So we put people into group coaching and help them with their diet, their exercise, their sleep, their focus, and also their relationships. And we use that using social accountability groups. So we found in particular that there's a couple of health behaviors that really, really help with body fat. So obviously nutrition is number one in terms of eating right. And so I have a lot of background expertise in that. I helped design the nutrition curriculum for Omada Health, which at this point has helped 550,000 people lose 5 million pounds. And so I have written a whole ebook on using health behavior change. If you're interested, you can check it out. It's you can join our community. It's at discord.maximustribe.com. And that's where we do the coaching there. And you can also check out our ebook. It's at maximustribe.com/book. And in the book, I talk about sort of nutrition tips that you can do joining. Hey, Sohab, welcome. That you can do it in order to minimize body fat and increase muscle mass. The other thing that people find actually tremendously effective for losing body fat that a lot of folks don't realize is improving your sleep is the best way of dropping body fat. And there's studies that show that people who get insufficient sleep, so typically like less than 6 hours a night, compared to people who are sleeping a sufficient quantity, like 7 to 9 hours of night, it's a night and day difference in terms of their ability to lose body fat. And the reason for that is when we're sleep deprived, you know, our hunger hormones get dysregulated and we end up eating more. We particularly crave carbohydrates. And so I always tell people, like, if you want to lose body fat, you gotta lose it in the, you don't lose it in the gym, you lose it in the kitchen, by cutting, you know, cooking, basically. The number one tip I have is just cook your own food. And that way you can avoid things like refined seed oils, as we've talked about. But the other one is making sure you're getting enough sleep, because it helps regulate your appetite and you'll drop that body fat. So this is part of what we do as part of the King protocol. And it can absolutely help you kind of get and lose body fat and thus have that slimmer, more chiseled kind of jawline that you know, men like, which kind of obviously enhances your masculinity and gives you a nice look. So we have had some folks get some pretty nice changes in terms of their body composition as a result of that. And those are the two focus areas that I would focus on if that's your particular aesthetic goal in order to look, you know, your best.
Good, good. So last week I recently had my biometric screening. And
wonderful.
I do that once every year. Exception was last year, obviously. But the numbers are all mainly normal.
Mm-hmm.
I do have HDL less than 40, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's a good cholesterol. Right. And it has been consistent like that for the last, very many years, 5, 6, 7 years,
actually. Yeah.
And it's very consistent, and I don't know what to do about that. Is that, and I did visit my primary care doctor, and he said it's typical from where you come from, nothing to be too concerned about. Just wanted to share your thoughts as well.
Yeah, so Sri's asking about HDL, which is the so-called good cholesterol, as opposed to the LDL, so-called bad cholesterol, though that's an oversimplification. LDL, you can't just look at it and assume it's sort of bad cholesterol. There's different types of LDL. There's VLDL and the normal LDL, and you have to kind of do the more refined tests in order to make sure that it's predicts negative cardiovascular outcomes. But we do know that higher HDL is associated with beneficial health outcomes. And so there are steps that we can take in order to boost HDL. So number one actually is exercise. Physical activity, cardiovascular exercise can actually boost HDL. And so even bodybuilders who are doing a lot of weight training, try to do a little bit of cardio as well in order to increase their HDL. So the more physically active you are, it actually can change your numbers. So that's number one. Make sure you're losing any extra body fat that you have. That can also help losing like extra belly fat in particular can help raise your LDL levels. And then third, you want to try to consume you know, healthy fats and again cholesterols. And the two foods that are particularly helpful in boosting HDL, one I would say are eggs. So eggs are tremendously healthy. Unfortunately, they've gotten a bad rap due to the weird low-fat fad. I actually posted on Twitter the other day, Dariush Mozafarian, who's the Dean of Nutrition at Tufts, posted this new the food compass score. And it was arguing that foods like Cheerios and Lucky Charms are healthier than eggs fried in butter. And I was just like, oh, this is complete nonsense. Eggs are very, very healthy. There's studies, in fact, that shows that people who just eat nothing but eggs for 30 days, like 10 eggs a day, it increases their HDL. It doesn't necessarily increase the type of LDL that's associated with bad outcomes. So eggs are super healthy food and they help boost HDL levels. In addition, shrimp. If you eat shrimp or you like shrimp, shrimp are also a high source of dietary cholesterol, which can boost those HDL levels as well. So those two foods in particular seem to be particularly helpful. Obviously, cutting down on alcohol and smoking also helps. And then one last tip, if your doctor approves of it, is a cinnamon extract, although you want to be very careful in choosing the right one. You do not want to consume Saigon cinnamon. Or Vietnamese cinnamon, because it has a compound in it which can be toxic at high doses. You want to consume Ceylon cinnamon, which does not have that. But there's studies that show that consuming 1 to 3 grams of Ceylon cinnamon a day, so if you're doing 3 grams, I would suggest 1 gram with every meal, significantly boosts HDL cholesterol. It also seems to improve blood glucose. It's a very common sort of anti-diabetic supplement, and even improve blood pressure as well. I think it's one of these like wonder herbs, if you will, and it's delicious. So if you like mixing it into your drinks, having it with hot chocolate, etc., highly recommend it. Just make sure, like I said, you're using the correct variety, which is the Ceylon cinnamon. Try to buy it organic and from a really good quality source. There's very like adulterated sources out there, mislabeled sources where you're buying the cheap stuff and they call it the Ceylon stuff because it's more expensive. So go spend the extra few dollars and making sure that you're buying the right kind, because it's actually pretty cheap. And you can buy like 16 ounces or a pound of cinnamon for like $20. It'll last you forever, for the whole year probably. So those are my tips for improving HDL: physical exercise, lose extra weight, eat good fats from eggs and shrimp, cut out smoking and alcohol, and consider, with doctor's approval, supplementing with cinnamon as well.
Cameron, sorry, I just had a question about, I heard in regards to HDL, you guys heard of something called cardarine?
Yeah, I have heard of that.
Would you recommend that as something to look at, or is that, is because it's still a research chemical, we don't really know much about it?
Yeah, I don't recommend it. So for folks who are curious, cardarine, or aka GW501516, is a research chemical. It's a SARM. It's a selective androgen receptor modulator. It was in clinical trials, I believe, by GlaxoSmithKline, but it basically exists on the black market. So the problem is, you don't know what the hell you're getting, and you don't know if it's cardarine or not. There's been a bunch of like studies that have shown that when people sell basically black market research chemicals, they're often like, the majority of them are adulterated. They often do have the chemical that you're interested in, but they often sneak in another chemical that you're not aware of. The dosing is way off, and it may be polluted with other sort of toxins or chemicals. So it's like basically taking illegal drugs. I don't recommend it from a safety or health perspective, because it's not regulated. These things haven't passed clinical trials. We also don't know about their long-term safety or efficacy. So I think it's crazy to take, quite frankly, a random research chemical that you buy illegally on the black market to improve your HDL. The reason that some people take cardarine is it seems to enhance endurance in endurance athletes. Now, if you're like a professional endurance athlete and you're taking an illegal drug in order to boost your performance, that's a whole different use case. But I think for the normal healthy individual who's just looking to improve their cholesterol levels, taking like cinnamon or a pantothene, which is like a vitamin B6, artichoke leaf extract, or a citrus bergamot extract, all of these are like standardized herbal supplements that seem to improve cholesterol levels, as opposed to like taking a statin. And they're much, much safer than taking a random research black market chemical. So I think you should always start with safer stuff first, rather than taking anything illicit on the black market.
Okay, thank you, Cameron. I appreciate that. It was a bit of a curveball, but thank you really for that assessment there.
No problem. Safety first. You know, we always say in medicine, the important thing is to do no harm. And so, like, why would you want a guinea pig on yourself and take really random SARMs, especially for this use case? There's a difference in taking a SARM in order to ascend. Like most people take SARMs basically as an oral anabolic steroid. That's how you should think about them. They're basically black market oral anabolic steroids, but they're not safe and they can't be taken long-term. And that's exactly why we started Maximus, was to provide people with a safer alternative to, you know, buying stuff illegally online that's probably made in a bathtub in some random third world country, right? Our pharmaceutical drugs are produced in the United States by manufacturers that meet all the quality control requirements. They're produced and compounded by a licensed pharmacy. There's certificates of analysis, so we know that what you're getting is pharmaceutically pure. So I would always say, take something that's legitimately prescribed by a doctor and shipped by a, you know, reputable pharmacy in the United States. And so you can trust that what you're taking is legitimate, because, you know, your body is a temple and it's priceless, and you don't want to accidentally, like, you know, poison yourself with something that some random person made on the internet. So, by the way, so they're going to clamp down on SARMs. There's already like a lot of talk in the sort of online community that they're gonna go after the companies that are selling these things. So I think we're only just seeing it temporarily not enforced because of COVID. But I think you're already seeing some of the sellers essentially saying that they're selling out their last stock and they're not gonna replenish it because they've been warned essentially that it's illegal. So I think you're gonna see them disappear for the most part, at least in terms of very obvious sources. So and that tells you something, right? If they're kind of going after the places that are selling it, probably not a great thing to take.
Great. Thanks for that insight and thanks for answering my question. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
What do you think of the ketogenic diet to naturally increase testosterone?
There's no association that I know of between the ketogenic diet and testosterone. I am a fan of ketogenic diets for other reasons. I think the ketogenic diet is the best diet for diabetes. So if you're trying to lower your blood sugar levels or improve your insulin resistance, which is kind of the physiological cause of the progression of type 2 diabetes, then ketogenic diets have a very strong evidence base behind them. In fact, there was a paper that was published a few years ago, and I believe it had something like 39 authors, and they were basically arguing that it should be the first line treatment for not only type 2 diabetes, but even type 1 diabetes, which is even genetic, but it can help people control their diabetes and require less insulin injections, even in type 1 diabetics. It also seems to be probably the best diet for weight loss and the best diet for reducing triglycerides, which is something we haven't talked about, but I would argue is even more important than HDL and LDL. If you have high triglycerides, that's what you want to really watch out for. And ketogenic diets or low carb diets seem to be particularly strong at reducing triglycerides. So for all of those reasons, you should do ketogenic diets. However, it is not the best diet for hormonal health. If you think about it, ketosis is kind of a stressful state, right? It means that you're probably not, if you think about it from an ancestral hunter-gatherer perspective, you're not in a state of abundance. There's a limited food supply. You're not able to consume any berries or fruits or tubers, which are our sort of natural sources of carbohydrates. And so your body essentially switches to relying on consuming dietary fat or burning your own body fat as fuel. And so that's the nice thing about our bodies. It's almost like a car that can use both unleaded and diesel fuel. We can burn carbohydrates. We can also burn fats as our primary fuel source. And we've evolved the ability to basically switch between these two fuel sources based on the abundance or availability of food. But it is, like I said, a stressful state to kind of be in like the winter time, so to speak, where maybe there isn't as much abundant carbohydrates. And so the problem with ketogenic diets is they increase cortisol. Cortisol is the stress hormone and it's catabolic as opposed to anabolic hormones like testosterone, which build muscle. Catabolic hormones like cortisol cause muscle wasting. And so as a result of that increased cortisol, increased stress, it may actually impair optimal testosterone levels. So as a result of that, if you're trying to maximize your testosterone levels, or even the women who are listening, just maintain optimal hormone health, I do suggest actually consuming a little bit of carbohydrates. If you look at ancestral diets, they're typically still consuming 20% of their calories from carbohydrates. A ketogenic diet, in contrast, only consumes about 5% of calories from carbohydrates, or at least a strict ketogenic diet. So I don't think we need to consume as many carbohydrates as a standard American diet in which people are consuming, I don't know, 40, 50 plus percent of their calories from carbohydrates. But what I suggest rather instead is a lower carb, not a low carb, but a lower carb diet in which maybe 20% up to 30% of your calories can be from carbohydrates, although they should not be from sugar, added sugars, refined grains, white bread, refined starches like white pasta, those stuff you really want to stay away from. But if you're consuming it from tubers, which are below ground storage vegetables, think of potatoes, sweet potatoes, turnips, carrots, things like that. Those are pretty healthy. If you're consuming it from more ancestral fruits, organic berries, strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, things of that nature, those are healthy sort of sugars and fruits. Anything in those categories are healthy carbohydrates, and they will prevent your cortisol from going too sky high and impairing testosterone production and synthesis. In fact, there's a lot of people anecdotally, including Dominic D'Agostino, who's one of the biggest advocates of ketogenic diets, who notice that ketogenic diets sometimes actually impair sleep quality. Like people will, because of the excess cortisol, have troubles having deep restful sleep. So Dom, who's a fellow professor, colleague, I think at University of Florida, he actually discovered like if he just has a cup of blueberries before he goes to sleep, even on a ketogenic diet, it kind of like breaks out of ketosis, so to speak. But that extra carbohydrates basically allows him to sleep better. And so that's why I think like you want to be careful about having excess cortisol too much on a very, very strict ketogenic diet. Like I said, I think about it therapeutically. I do think it's a great diet for a lot of people, but you just want to make sure that you're not overdoing it and impairing your sleep or impairing your testosterone synthesis.
Hi, Cameron.
Hey, Dana.
Hey, I'm a scientist and professor across the bridge over at Berkeley. I have a question about kind of the state of the art on exogenous administration of tea. How, like, what are you guys doing these days in terms of, you know, is Androgel still kind of like the best way to manipulate testosterone?
Yeah, great question. So as clarification, if you missed the beginning of our radio show, so we actually don't do testosterone replacement therapy. Because we find that our philosophy and the philosophy of our advisors, who are the top urologists at various academic medical centers across the country, is that essentially younger men, especially men below the age of 50 to 65, really shouldn't be on testosterone replacement therapy unless they have what's called primary hypogonadism, right? So they have an inability to produce their own testosterone due to an illness or testicular injury. That obviously doesn't apply to the majority of men. It's only a few percentage of men really who have primary hypogonadism and they cannot produce their own testosterone. What is much more common is secondary hypogonadism, as you probably know, in which your body can produce its own testosterone. It's just not producing as much as it should or is optimal. And we've talked about before how there's a lot of reasons for that. A lot more obesity, metabolic syndrome, alcohol use, and also endocrine disrupting chemicals from all the plastics and pollutants in our environment. And so as a result of that, you know, our solution actually uses a drug called enclomiphene. It's a selective estrogen receptor modulator, or a SERM. It's essentially the isomer of Clomid or clomiphene, which is, as you may be familiar with, an FDA approved fertility drug. So it's used in both women and men to improve sperm count and fertility. It's been used since 1967. It's very, very safe. And the advantage of it over TRT, including the injections or even the androgel that you mentioned, is one, it's an oral medication. So you don't have to, you know, deal with rubbing gel on your scrotum, which you can't touch to your partner, which can, you know, masculinize them. You don't have to deal with weekly injections, which are obviously uncomfortable and painful for most men. But it's an oral prescription medication. So just like how women take oral birth control, it's a once a day oral medication. So it's just like taking any other pill or capsule. So it's a very convenient form factor. But the mechanism is pretty clever. It basically blocks your estrogen receptors. And as a result of that, the body is like, oh, I'm not getting enough estrogen, so I need to produce more of my own testosterone. So it actually stimulates LH production, or luteinizing hormone, in the testes, which stimulates your own natural testosterone production. And there's, in fact, head-to-head studies that compare enclomiphene to the androgel that you mentioned, which is the testosterone gel. And it actually finds that it increases testosterone equally as much, if not more, in particularly obese men. So it actually can have superior results to TRT in folks who are obese. And so as a result of that, we just think it's a far, far superior solution, because you basically get as much of the testosterone increase, about 1.5 to 2.5x your baseline levels. Most guys on average double their levels, but without all the downsides, because it's your own natural testosterone that's being produced. You're not dependent on a gel or an injection. You're not getting your testicular shrinkage, and you're not causing infertility. That's the really sad thing about TRT, is like 20% of guys on TRT don't even realize that's causing them infertility. They weren't sort of educated properly, or you know, they're getting it from some online pill mill that doesn't tell them that it makes them infertile until they try to conceive with their partner and they find out they're not able to. And so, our solution maintains, even increases fertility. And so we think it's a much safer solution, and also can be used in healthy young men. There's studies that show that it can be used for years without sort of any dependence that's formed. You can discontinue it anytime without a lot of problems. And because it is stimulating your own natural production, it can be basically used without a lot of issues. There's very little side effects. We've actually published the side effects on our website from all the clinical trials. You can check it out at maximustribe.com/testosterone. But the side effects are minimal. They're in the 1-3% range. The common side effects are like headache, dizziness, nausea, which is actually no different than placebo in the clinical trials. So they're relatively few. All medications have side effects, but it's relatively safe compared to some other medication that we're using actually as part of our protocol. And then we bundle it in with health behavior coaching. So we do group-based coaching around diet, exercise, sleep, and focus. A lot of the things that we're talking about here today to make sure that we're holistically addressing their hormones as well.
In the lab, if you want to just like a short-term T increase to look at behavioral outcomes, or I'm a social psychologist, so mm-hmm. what is the state of the art still, what I just discussed earlier, or is there something new and better that behavioral researchers could use? Because like androgel, for example, you have to wait for 4 hours. Is there a faster exogenous administration that can be used in a laboratory setting, I guess, is the question.
That's a really interesting question. So you're using it for research purposes. The drug that we're using, I think it actually, like, within a few hours, does achieve sort of peak serum levels. Like somewhere, if I'm looking at even just the graphs, like probably within 2-3 hours, you get sort of the maximal concentration in the blood, and the half-life of a clomiphene is about 10 hours. So you could potentially use it for research purposes if you can get it through IRB. So it will stimulate the production that way. But I've never seen it used for that purpose. It's a novel idea. So I don't know. You might want to look at like some of the pharmacokinetic studies and see if it suits your purposes. But if you're looking for just like a one-off, like, I don't know. I imagine like an intranasal form would be the best bang for your buck in terms of if you're trying to get an immediate like boost, that would probably be it. There is a form of TRT called Natesto. I believe that's the intranasal form, if I'm not mistaken. That would probably be the fastest acting form that you could probably get for like, trying to get someone in and out of a lab for, within a few hours.
Thank you so much.
Yep, absolutely.
Hi, Cameron.
Hi, Joyce.
Yes, I want to ask something concerning vitamin B12. I don't know whether it's within the discussion.
Yep, feel free to ask.
That we are having. Okay, so I went to the lab and I did a test for my vitamin B12 mm-hmm. Levels. And then the result tells me I have 966 picomoles per liter. But what I know is that the normal range is between 133 and 675 picomoles per liter. So is it harmful to have 966 picomoles per liter?
Are you taking any multivitamins or B-complex supplements?
No, I'm taking multivitamins, but it doesn't contain B12 specifically.
Okay. Most multivitamins do. I'm surprised that it doesn't. It's very common that people see an elevation in their serum B12 levels as a result of supplementation. So it's not unusual, and the usual cause of it is exogenous supplementation. So it's not just multivitamins. Like a lot of other supplements, unless you're reading the labels very carefully, will add B12. So I would double check the labels of all of your supplements and your energy drinks. There's a ton of like Red Bull, for instance, contains vitamin B12. So a lot of drinks will add it as sort of like a nutraceutical. So I would just double, triple check that you're not accidentally consuming it from a supplement, a drink, even some fortified sort of foods these days, like these energy, these protein bars and other things, add sort of vitamins in order to fortify them. But it's very easy to add a lot of B12, which will spike your levels. Now, if that's the case, then you know, it's not, it's a water soluble vitamin. It's not like vitamins A, D, K, and E, which are fat soluble and accumulate, and so you can get toxicity from them. So usually it's like, that's why you'll see, even with the multivitamins, they'll have more than the recommended daily intake, sometimes like hundreds or even thousands of percent beyond the recommended daily intake, because the toxicity of vitamin B12, you have to take very, very high dosages to you know, run into issues. It's hard to like overdose, so to speak, on vitamin B12. So I think the recommendation generally, if a physician sees an elevation on you know, a test, is just cut out whatever you know, vitamin or drink or whatever that you're try to find the source of it that's causing that, and then retest to see if your levels go back down. Now, there may be some other reason that your levels are elevated that may not have to do with dietary or supplemental reasons. I don't know. You know, it could be some sort of like medical condition. That's for you and your physician to sort of ascertain. But the first, you know, I always believe in Occam's razor. The simplest solution is usually the correct one. So it's just more common to see that because of supplementation or accidental supplementation. So work with your physician, I would say, first and foremost, to just kind of figure out what's going on. And you may want to try eliminating some things that may be the cause of that, and then retesting to see if it gets better. Otherwise, they can obviously do a workup and differential diagnosis to see if there's something else that may be causing that as an underlying issue. So you got to kind of figure that out. I can't provide medical advice on that.
Thanks a lot for the feedback. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Hi, Cameron. Sorry, I just had a quick question about if you were not taking testosterone replacement therapy and you decided to go on HCG, just to bring your LH up a bit, would that be okay as a form of replacement therapy instead of injecting maybe something exogenous or...
Well, so you're asking about HCG, it's human chronotic gonadotropin. It's typically used to treat fertility issues. It is typically more commonly co-administered with testosterone replacement therapy because, as I mentioned, testosterone replacement therapy causes infertility. And so co-administering HCG helps offset some of the infertility issues because it does increase LH. It's essentially mimics LH. That's how it kind of works in the body. But to your point, it actually is an injectable too. You have to inject HCG just like you inject TRT. So it doesn't really improve the form factor. The only advantage of it is that it maintains fertility as opposed to TRT, which causes infertility. However, as a monotherapy, meaning if you're using HCG as a standalone, doesn't seem to be very popular, honestly, as a treatment. I think it's because once you have to inject, you might as well just go on TRT for a lot of people, and it seems to work better. And HCG is expensive, much more expensive than TRT. It's harder to get these days. And in addition to that, it has to be calibrated very carefully. It can spike your estradiol or your estrogen levels. And so sometimes you have to like fine-tune the dosing. You may require an aromatase inhibitor to control your estradiol levels. It's just a very finicky solution. And so that's why I don't see it very commonly used as a standalone therapy for increasing testosterone. Like I said, I see it much more commonly in people who are already on TRT and they're just trying to maintain their fertility by adding that second injection. However, I just think it's a very poor solution because in clomiphene, stimulates your LH production very similarly to HCG and actually does it in a better way because HCG mimics LH and thus in the long term is actually suppressing your body's own LH production. And clomiphene, on the other hand, because it's blocking the estrogen receptors and sending a signal to the testes, it actually produces your own LH naturally from the testes. And so the drugs actually both work in similar ways, But enclavafine doesn't suppress natural LH production, while HCG does. And second, HCG is an injection, while enclavafine is an oral medication. So I think if you're going to go down that pathway, which is trying to increase LH, I think enclavafine is a far superior solution, in my opinion, than HCG. If you're really interested in this topic, we actually had one of our medical advisors, Dr. Eugene Shippen, who wrote literally one of the books on testosterone. He talks about it during our interview. You can find it on YouTube. Just go to Maximus Tribe, type in Eugene Shippen. And he talks about actually using HCG and getting good results. But the problem is he's just like, you know, enclavafine and clomiphene are better because you don't have to worry about injections, the frequency of the dosing, you know, overshooting it. It's just a much easier, simpler, and safer solution. So he actually prefers the enclavafine over HCG for that reason. And I think most good clinicians, quite frankly, do as well.
Oh, thank you, Cameron. Just a quick side note on that. What about HMG for the FSH?
Yeah, I mean, that's a different use case altogether. So for people who are listening, LH stimulates the production of testosterone, but FSH is follicle stimulating hormone, and that's responsible for increasing your sperm. And so the only reason most people really care about increasing FSH is if they're trying to conceive and get their wife pregnant. So for most men, it's not really a useful marker. We don't actually even measure it as part of our program because we're not a fertility program, right? We're not, that's not the reason what we're doing, what we're doing. So it can have some benefits there, but I think that's it's a totally different use case in terms of trying to, you know, enhance fertility. That's not really what we do. So I think that's just a different category altogether.
Thank you, Cameron.
Absolutely. By the way, enclavafine stimulates both LH and FSH, actually. If you look at the lab test, both of them increase. And that's why, as I mentioned, like Clomid, the parent drug, is a fertility drug. That's what its FDA approval is for. And so I don't think you need to take stuff like HMG when you have Clomid and enclavafine that's been used for much longer and gets both the testosterone boost and it'll improve your sperm count as well. So, you know, you get double the benefits, essentially.
I had two, potentially three questions if you have the time, but
ask your favorite one first and we'll do our best.
Okay, so I just had some questions about what is your view or opinion on, I don't know if you've heard of Shannon Swan and her book, The Countdown, and she's talking about how we may basically just go extinct as a species because of our lowering fertility and rates. And then secondly, your thoughts on ashwagandha.
Yeah. So there was a great, I don't know if this is the same person that you're talking about, but there was an article in GQ about sperm count zero, and was actually talking to some of the researchers in this area that have basically shown that sperm counts have dropped about 50% in the last 50 years, pretty drastic. And it seems to be a linear trend, meaning it's continuing to drop at the same pace. And so they're basically projecting by the year 2048, I believe, like we'll basically achieve sperm count zero and not be able to reproduce as a species. So, I mean, it's a pretty scary thought. I don't think that will actually happen. I think what might happen is, you know, fertility rates will drop as a whole in terms of our average as a population, but there's always going to be guys that are going to be more fertile, and maybe those would be the guys that are going to, you know, pass on their progeny. But I don't think it's equally affecting all men. Now, the environmental pollution, it's hard to get away from, right? Because it's literally in our water. It's in our plastics. We actually had previous radio shows, I think in the last week or two, where I talked about the sources of these endocrine disrupting chemicals. I do think it's a real problem. I don't think we're going to be wiped out in 30 years, but I do think what we are going to see, and we already are seeing, is a huge amount of fertility problems, and not just female-oriented ones, but male-driven fertility problems, which, you know, we often call idiopathic infertility, meaning we don't know what the cause of it is. But now that testing has become more significant, we're finding that BPAs, these phthalates, these other endocrine disrupting chemicals, we can now measure these things and potentially try to reduce them from our system. And we use, for instance, compounds like calcium D-glucarate to flush out these extra estrogens, or what are called xenoestrogens, from our system. And that's actually part of our Maximus King protocol. So, you know, we think that is, in fact, one of the causes of lower testosterone and sperm count. And so we've designed part of our protocol to address that by getting rid of sort of these excess environmental estrogens, and at the same time, increasing our own endogenous natural testosterone. So I do think it's a big issue. I don't think we're going to go extinct soon, but it is a huge problem, just like obesity, just like diabetes. I think we really need to pay attention to it. And, you know, I've been sounding the alarm, certainly on social media for the last, you know, year or two about this issue. So I'm glad that you've heard about it, and I'm glad more and more people are becoming aware of it, because it is just going to be that in conjunction with advanced paternal age, people are having children much later in life in their 30s. They're just going to run into a lot more fertility problems than we ever expected. What was your second question, Jay?
And thank you for answering that as well. The second question was just what are your thoughts on
Ashwagandha. Yeah. I think it's the most overrated and overhyped supplement ever. I'm not a fan of it. I don't think it does anything meaningful for testosterone. I've looked at the literature. I've talked about this in previous shows. There's one study that showed a 14.7% increase in testosterone from taking ashwagandha. That's not meaningful. Our protocol increases levels by 50 to 150%, right? By comparison to 15%. So we're talking like an order of magnitude of a 10x difference. You'll feel the difference on our protocol. You're not going to feel a difference at all on ashwagandha. So I don't think it's a very effective testosterone booster. And then the downsides of it is actually psychoactive. So it does actually seem to have some effects on serotonergic receptors. And so a lot of guys do start to report some side effects from ashwagandha. And so, you know, just like anecdotally from the literature, it seems to, you know, cause, I've heard of issues around insomnia, which is ironic because it's supposed to lower cortisol and improve sleep, but people do tend to report some side effects. So I think, you know, a lot of people just assume natural substances and herbs, because they come from the earth, are safe. I actually have a contrarian point of view. Single molecule substances that are, it's just one compound, they're better characterized, they're better studied, because we can study the effects both in vitro and in petri dishes in the lab, and also in vivo in human beings. But compounds, herbal compounds, even though they've been used in Ayurvedic medicine for hundreds of years, they have many different compounds in them. They have many different effects, often even contrasting effects. And so they can, you know, sometimes, especially in these like very strong dosages that are available in over-the-counter supplements, these dosages aren't regulated, by the way. You know, like when it says 500 milligrams on the back of your supplement bottle, it could be 300 in there, it could be 1,000. Nobody tests these things, you know, maybe outside of Consumer Reports. Anecdotally, I've heard it actually causes a lot of issues with side effects. I don't particularly recommend it.
Cool, thank you. And actually, since we're on the kind of continued subject of fertility as well as testosterone, do your supplements have any effect on fertility at all? Because I was donating sperm, and they asked me if I had taken any sort of supplements or anything like that, and if so, what, in terms of like working out and shakes and pre-workout and post-workout shit.
Yeah.
And they said that some of that can actually, yeah, affect fertility.
Yeah, so, I mean, we use a prescription medication as sort of the core of our protocol. So it's not a supplement that you can buy over the counter. But as I mentioned with one of the previous callers, our substance, enclomiphene, increases both LH and FSH. And so the FSH component of it actually tends to maintain or even increase fertility in guys. So if you're using it, obviously, and you're donating sperm as part of a sperm bank, you can just tell them, if you were on our protocol, for instance, that, hey, I'm taking in clomiphene. It's the isomer of Clomid or clomiphene. It's actually a fertility drug. So it actually should enhance, basically, sperm count and for that purposes. But that's up to them to decide of whether they want to accept that or not. I don't know their particular protocols, but it shouldn't cause any harm. In fact, it can probably only be helpful when it comes to fertility.
Cool. Thanks very much. Sorry to interrupt there. I'm just asking, tolerance? Does your tolerance go down for enclomiphene?
No.
Citrate?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to build tolerance as far as we know. So I think there's studies that look out as far as like 3 years, and that hasn't been noted in it. And just in terms of its mechanism of action, it doesn't seem to have a tolerance building effect. And we use very low doses as part of our protocol. Like, we typically start people on 6.25 milligrams, which is even half the dose that's most commonly used in the clinical trials. They have used 6.25, 12.5, 25 milligrams. They've generally find 12.5 is most effective for folks who have secondary hypogonadism or low testosterone. We find that because some of our folks have low testosterone, some of them don't. Some people have just normal testosterone. They just want higher levels of testosterone. For especially folks like that, the lower dose of 6.25 is more than enough. Sometimes guys will see like their levels double even on that really low dose. And the nice thing about our protocol is, that we do lab testing and the doctor will look at those results, but also most importantly, your symptoms. We always say we treat symptoms, not numbers. And based on your response can adjust the dosages. We actually have dosages that vary like eightfold. You can start as low as 3.125 and go all the way up to 25 milligrams. And we just adjust the dosage based on your individual needs and response. And I think that's the right way to do medicine, is everything should be personalized. As opposed to a lot of like these pill mills out there, they'll shill you the same 25 milligrams of Viagra for ED. And it doesn't matter how much you weigh or how much of an ED problem you have, you get the same generic medication at the same generic dosage. We don't do cookie cutter medicine. As a result of that, you get a personalized dosage and you figure out over a couple months, what's the right dosage that works for you. And so as a result of that, you're always taking the minimal effective dose, is the way that I kind of put it. And it mitigates the chances of having any side effects. So there's absolutely no tolerance even at the higher dosages. But if you're trying to obviously maintain any other sort of side effects, you always want to take the minimum amount that basically gets you the most bang for your buck in terms of clinical outcomes and making sure that you're feeling your best and take no more, essentially. All right, great questions, everyone. That's it for today. It's 7:01. If you have any questions that you didn't get to ask me this week, we host this show every single Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific time. You can join us on Clubhouse, YouTube Live, Instagram Live, or on Discord. So you can join our community if you want to continue this discussion. We actually have a community, online community of 1,200 men who are interested in health optimization and what we call mutual improvement, supporting each other in terms of improving their health. And you can join that at discord.maximustribe.com. It's a free community that's open to everyone. And if you're interested in our product, we actually have a special link for Clubhouse listeners. It's clubhouse.maximustribe.com. And you can go through that special link and sign up for our program if you are in California and Florida. We'll soon be in 13 other states soon. So if you're not in one of those states, but you're interested, just sign up for our email list and we'll let you know as soon as we're launched in your state. But great questions, everyone. Really great show. And you can check out previous shows if you're interested. We record all of these and upload these onto YouTube at our channel, which is Maximus. And you can just do a search for Maximus or Dr. Cam on YouTube there. So have a lovely evening, everyone. Stay happy, stay healthy, and I'll catch you all next week.